Tonight, breaking news as we come on the air. It is now in the hands of the jury. Deliberations now underway in the trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. The prosecution and defense and their closing arguments today. The prosecutors telling jurors, you can believe your eyes. And what the defense asked the jury to think about in addition to those 9 minutes, 29 seconds seen by the nation and the world. Alex Perez tonight from Minneapolis. The other news this Monday night, more than half of all adults now receiving at least one dose of vaccine. And tonight, what the CDC is now saying about the temporary pause of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. The CDC director saying they are looking into a very small number of cases that could be related, though still unconfirmed. And Dr. Fauci on whether there's any chance the U.S. could stop using that one-shot vaccine. News late today on Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick, who died following the Capitol riot. The medical examiner's report on his cause of death. The facility suddenly shut down, meant to help children, hundreds of girls, who had crossed the southern border into the U.S. Alarming details about why the Biden administration abruptly closed the facility. The ABC News exclusive Pierre Thomas one-on-one tonight with U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland on the anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing. The AG's new warning tonight about violent domestic extremists here in the U.S. Overseas news tonight about imprisoned Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny, what his doctor is now warning. News on the Queen tonight after bidding farewell to Prince Philip. Those images of her alone, then behind the wheel. And news tonight on Princess William and Harry. And those incredible images from Mars on a Monday night, NASA making history. The first NASA helicopter to fly on another planet, and you'll see it.
From ABC News World Headquarters in New York, this is World News Tonight with David Muir.
Good evening, and it's great to have you with us as we start another week together here. A very busy start to the week tonight, and we begin this evening with the dramatic moments in court today. The prosecution and the defense, their final arguments in the trial of former Minneapolis police officer Derek Chauvin. Tonight, it is now the jury's turn. They have been given instructions by the judge, and from this point forward, they will be sequestered until there's a verdict. The prosecution starting by weaving a very personal narrative about George Floyd, reminding the jurors he had a family, he was loved, and had a deep connection to his mother, who he called out for during those 9 minutes, 29 seconds, repeatedly saying he could not breathe. The prosecutor saying this is not an anti-police prosecution. This is about Officer Derek Chauvin, who betrayed the badge, they said, and the police witnesses who testified about that betrayal. The prosecution telling the jurors what they told them in their opening statement weeks ago, that you can believe your eyes, that this is a homicide. The defense arguing that Derek Chauvin acted reasonably, that he followed police guidelines. Chauvin taking off his mask so the jury could see him as his attorney defended him in the closing argument. His lawyer asking jurors to consider what came before those 9 minutes, the 16 minutes before, and to consider other factors that could have played a role in George Floyd's death. The prosecution's rebuttal saying our task is to show that Derek Chauvin and his knee to Floyd's neck was a substantial cause of death, not the only cause, but a substantial one. Reminding the jurors of the 9-year-old girl who testified and what she said that day, witnessing it all, to get off him. Tonight, what comes next now? The jurors sequestered, and ABC's Alex Perez leads us off now from Minneapolis.
The prosecution's closing message to the jury was clear. Believe your own eyes. What you saw in the video of George Floyd's final moments was murder, plain and simple.
It's exactly what you believed. It's exactly what you saw with your eyes. It's exactly what you knew. It's what you felt in your gut. It's what you now know in your heart. This wasn't policing. This was murder.
Prosecutor Steve Slisher arguing Floyd posed no threat to Derek Chauvin.
George Floyd was not a threat. He never was. He wasn't resisting. He just wasn't able to comply. They had him handcuffed.
He took on the defense notion that Floyd experienced a surge of strength in the struggle.
There was no superhuman strength that day. Just a human, just a man, lying on the pavement, being pressed upon, desperately crying out. A grown man crying out for his mother. A human being.
The prosecutor arguing Chauvin used excessive force, violating both the spirit and the letter of police department policy.
George Floyd begged until he could speak no more, and the defendant continued this assault.
Again and again, he emphasized the police force itself is not on trial, just one rogue officer.
The defendant is on trial not for being a police officer. He's not on trial for who he was. He's on trial for what he did.
The prosecution's closing argument lasting about an hour and 45 minutes. The defense spending nearly 3 hours. Chauvin removing his mask so the jury could see his face as his attorney argued he acted as a reasonable police officer would have acted.
You have to take into account that officers are human beings capable of making mistakes in highly stressful situations.
Defense attorney Eric Nelson telling the jury the bystander video of Floyd's final moment does not tell the whole story.
A reasonable police officer would, in fact, take into consideration the previous 16 minutes and 59 seconds. Their experience with the subject, the struggle that they had.
He showed video of Floyd resisting in the police vehicle.
Mr. Floyd was able to overcome the efforts of three police officers while handcuffed.
And he argued the bystanders seemed like a threat.
A reasonable police officer is recognizing that the crowd is in crisis. So a reasonable police officer considers his department's training. What are these potential signs of aggression that I may be confronted with?
The defense also arguing drugs and heart disease led to Floyd's death.
The failure of the state's experts to acknowledge any possibility at all, that any of these other factors in any way contributed to Mr. Floyd's death, defies medical science and it defies common sense and reason.
The prosecution challenging that point in rebuttal, arguing even if Floyd's drug use and heart condition contributed to Floyd's death, what matters is that Derek Chauvin's actions caused his death. Prosecutor Jerry Blackwell recalling the testimony of the 9-year-old girl who took the witness stand.
The fact that it's so simple that a child could understand it. In fact, a child did understand it when the 9-year-old girl said, "Get off of him." That's how simple it was. Get off of him.
Alex Perez joined us now from Minneapolis. And Alex, the case is now in the jury's hands tonight, the judge instructing them not to let bias, prejudice, passion, sympathy, or public opinion influence their decision, and warning them not to consider what consequences their verdict might have. But these jurors likely know, though, the country is watching.
Yeah, David, the judge very slowly and carefully explaining all of those instructions to the jury. Beginning tonight, they will be sequestered during deliberations. They'll work each evening until about 7:30. They've also been given laptops with all of that video and other evidence that they saw in court. David?
Alex Perez leading us off from Minneapolis. Alex, thank you. I want to bring in ABC's chief legal analyst, Dan Abrams, tonight, watching the proceedings with us all day. And, Dan, I know the prosecution will have a personal narrative in their closing argument, essentially arguing that Derek Chauvin had 9 minutes, 29 seconds, essentially to change course, and that even after Floyd stopped breathing, Chauvin did not stop. They said even after paramedics arrived, Chauvin did not stop with his knee to Floyd's neck.
Yeah, they're making the point this was not a split-second decision here. And they did keep emphasizing again and again, believe your eyes, use your common sense. And then they would intersperse with that the expert testimony using these big graphics to say they all say the same thing, which is that the force was not reasonable and that Derek Chauvin's actions were a substantial cause of the death.
On the other side, Dan, the defense asking jurors to think about what came before those 9 minutes, that they must take everything Chauvin witnessed that day into account, and that they must consider other potential contributing factors in George Floyd's death.
Yeah, they try and push the timeline back 17 minutes. They say you have to understand what was going on in Derek Chauvin's mind, what he had already seen from George Floyd to understand why he did what he did. And they also oppose the possibility of a whole series of other causes of death. But remember, as a legal matter, all prosecutors have to prove is that Derek Chauvin's actions were a substantial cause of death, not the only cause.
David? Dan Abrams watching the trial with us today. Dan, thank you. And we will, of course, stay on this as the jury deliberates, and we will break into programming when there is a verdict. Thank you, Dan. We're going to turn in the meantime to the other news this Monday night. The coronavirus here in the U.S., half of all adults now have now had one shot of the vaccine, and everyone 16 and older is now eligible here in the U.S. In New Jersey today, teenagers getting vaccinated, 16 and 17-year-olds. You see the numbers right there. 130,995,000 people have now had one shot. And tonight here, what the CDC is now saying about the temporary pause of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine. The CDC director saying they are looking into a small number of additional cases that might be related, though she said not confirmed. Here's ABC's Stephanie Ramos tonight.
Tonight, a green light for every American 16 years old and older to get a vaccine, a moment millions have been waiting for.
Finally, I feel like I can go out with COVID and feel safer.
I feel like it's just like the end to this whole crazy past year, and so I was really excited at the first opportunity to get it.
The country hitting a new vaccine milestone. More than 50% of adults have gotten at least one dose.
I feel great. I feel like a weight off my shoulders.
But COVID cases are still hovering around 67,000 a day. Another challenge, there are more people unwilling to get the vaccine in counties with the highest COVID rates. Dr. Anthony Fauci says it may take seeing a rise in infections to convince people to get it.
They'll look around and say, wait a minute, we're getting a lot of infections in our community. Maybe there really is something to this vaccination issue. Yeah. Hopefully they'll see that before there's too much disease, too much hospitalization, and too much death.
This vaccination event in Phoenix almost canceled after the pause on the Johnson & Johnson vaccine.
When you're working in communities, diverse communities that have been really devastated by this pandemic and already have hesitancy about getting the vaccine for a lot of reasons, this doesn't help.
A CDC panel will review Johnson & Johnson on Friday after reports of rare blood clots in six women. The CDC director today revealing they are investigating a few new unconfirmed reports.
These have been a handful of cases, not an overwhelming number of cases. We are working through and adjudicating them and verifying whether they do, in fact, reflect a true case.
So let's get to Stephanie Ramos with us tonight. And Stephanie, that CDC advisory panel will meet on the Johnson & Johnson one-shot vaccine on Friday. In the meantime, I know that Dr. Fauci was asked by our Martha Raddatz whether there was any possibility, any indication that the U.S. might stop using it altogether.
David, Dr. Fauci says he does not think that is likely, but he does expect a decision on the J&J vaccine by this Friday. He doesn't expect a complete stop, a recommendation for a stop to the use of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, but he does expect some restrictions going forward based on age or gender, some sort of new warning. David.
Stephanie Ramos with us on a Monday night. Thank you, Steph. And we're going to turn now to a developing headline late today in the death of Capitol Police Officer Brian Sicknick, who died 24 hours after the Capitol riots. Let's turn to ABC's congressional correspondent Rachel Scott with late reporting. Rachel, what are you learning?
David, tonight we are getting an answer to that key question surrounding the death of Officer Brian Sicknick. We are learning from this medical examiner's report that he died of natural causes, that he suffered from at least one stroke, passing away one day after the January 6th insurrection. You may remember seeing this image showing the moment just right after he was sprayed by that chemical agent. He went back inside of his office. He collapsed. Two suspects have been charged with assault. Tonight, Capitol Police saying the attack on Officer Sicknick was an attack on our democracy. And while they do accept these findings, they believe that anyone who attacked officers that day should be held accountable. David.
All right, Rachel Scott, who covers Congress for us. Rachel, thank you. Next tonight, the Biden administration abruptly closing a detention center housing hundreds of unaccompanied migrant girls. The allegations about what happened inside are disturbing tonight. ABC's chief White House correspondent, Cecilia Vega, and what she's learned, exclusive details on the allegations, and of course the question, why was the center allowed to open in the first place?
Tonight, this massive warehouse in Houston is closed. The nearly 500 unaccompanied migrant girls housed there abruptly moved. ABC News obtaining this exclusive video, staffers removing their belongings, girls being driven off in buses, and this exchange with police at the scene.
For their own safety.
Facing an influx at the border, the Biden administration rushed to open the center, awarding a $4 million contract to the National Association of Christian Churches, a group that specializes in disaster relief, not caring for migrant kids. But just 17 days later, that contract ended, after what sources say were multiple allegations, including not enough staffers to accompany children to the bathroom, some girls told to use plastic bags to relieve themselves, children sitting on cots most of the day, non-existent outdoor space. Migrant rights advocate Cesar Espinosa toured the site 2 weeks ago.
The girls were not allowed to get up unless it was to shower or to use the restroom. Even their meals were delivered to their cots.
Tonight, this new video showing the warehouse full of cots and the belongings left behind. A lawyer for the church group tells ABC News the administration, including Health and Human Services Secretary Javier Becerra, personally requested their services and that they did what they could do to help under the direction of HHS. But tonight, the Biden administration not answering questions about how a group with little to no experience working with migrant children was awarded a multi-million dollar contract to do exactly that.
And officials here are refusing to answer specifics about how this group was vetted and how they were ultimately awarded this contract. One White House official says this specific site did not meet the Biden administration's very high standard for child welfare. David, as for those girls, some are headed to other shelters now. Others, they tell me, will be reunited with family members here in the United States.
All right, Cecilia Vega with exclusive reporting today. Cecilia, thank you. We turn next to another ABC News exclusive tonight. Pierre Thomas, one-on-one with U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland on the anniversary of the Oklahoma City bombing. His warning tonight on domestic extremism right now in the U.S. and what he says still needs to be addressed in this country when it comes to race and justice. Our Chief Justice Correspondent Pierre Thomas with the Attorney General.
The closing arguments beginning in the Chauvin trial as we speak. What would your message to the American public be pending the verdict in the jury?
I intend to wait until the verdict before I will say anything, and I would urge the American people to do the same, to await the verdict. We will use every resource we have available to ensure that equal justice occurs.
Do you believe there is still pockets of racism and bias within law enforcement, and how widespread do you think it is?
Racism is an American problem. I think that plain to me that there's has been and remains discrimination against African Americans and other communities of color and other ethnic minorities. I think it's reflected in discrimination in housing, in employment, in the justice system. All of these things are still in America. We do not yet have equal justice under law.
David Garland was here today in Oklahoma City on the anniversary of that horrific bombing 26 years ago. He says the threat of domestic terror right now is high. In fact, he said it's increasing. And David, he acknowledges that some of the same forces that led to that bombing are still at play today. White supremacy, militia extremists, lies and conspiracies, David.
All right, Pierre Thomas, I know you have much more in the morning on Good Morning America. Pierre, thank you.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
The first ever criminal trial of a former president is underway in Manhattan. It's one of potentially four trials facing former President Trump as he makes his third bid for the White House. What do voters think about his culpability, and would a guilty verdict make a difference in the election? I'm Galen Druk, and every Monday and Thursday on the 538 Politics podcast, we break down the latest news from the campaign trail. We sort through the noise and zoom in on what really matters, using data and research as we go. That's 538 Politics every Monday and Thursday, wherever you get your podcasts.
Tonight, a former deputy wanted for killing three people now under arrest in Austin, Texas. Authorities say Stephen Broderick is accused of killing his ex-wife, teenage daughter, and her boyfriend. police surrounding him following a 20-hour manhunt. Overseas tonight, and there is growing concern about the health of Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny. Russian officials transferring him now to a prison hospital, they say. His doctor says he could be near death and that he's not receiving the medical care he needs. The White House again calling for Navalny's release. To the index, and Queen Elizabeth made her first trip driving alone at Windsor Castle, a sign of her strength and moving forward following the funeral for Prince Philip. Of course, Queen Elizabeth sitting alone in the chapel, seen by the world. Her birthday is Wednesday, turning 95, bidding farewell to her husband of 73 years. Princes William and Harry in the procession, and then sending a signal, emerging together from that chapel before Harry comes back to the U.S. Finally tonight here, NASA making history. Gio Benitez on the helicopter taking flight on Mars.
Tonight, the rover Perseverance capturing the full takeoff and landing of the Mars helicopter Ingenuity, making history as the first powered aircraft ever to fly on another planet. Cheers from Mission Control as the first images rolled in.
This morning, our dream came true.
Ingenuity flew for 40 seconds, up to 10 feet in the Martian atmosphere, which is so thin the craft had to weigh less than 4 pounds. Ingenuity project manager Mimi Ong showing me one of its blades.
Wow. Oh my gosh. This is like paper.
Exactly. But it is strong enough for you to spin it through this very thin atmosphere at 2,400 revolutions per minute.
Mimi calling this their Wright brothers moment on Mars.
And David, NASA plans to fly Ingenuity 4 more times. They hope to go higher and farther. David.
4 more times. Can't wait, Gio. Thank you. And thank you at home. We'll see you tomorrow. I'm David Muir. Good night.